But I discovered for me, my mind works better when I work 2.5 or 3 hours and then sleep on it. So every morning here at Boston Avenue, 2.5 hours, my secretary tries to protect me unless somebody's kid got hit by a school bus or something. It just says, could Dr. Biggs return your call at 11:30? And most everybody's glad to do that. So I'm just up here in my office by myself. If I can do 2.5 hours Monday and 2.5 hours Tuesday and 2.5 hours Wednesday and Thursday and Friday noon, I'm ready. I can really be family, you know, with Gail or with children or grandchildren until about 5 o'clock Friday afternoon. About 5 o'clock Friday afternoon. As Ernest Hemingway used to say, it's the bull at 5 o'clock. For me, it's the bull the next morning at 8:30, and I'm not good company. I need to be by myself. I may have the football game going on television, but I'm in a room by myself, and I'm sitting there going, point one, illustrate, point two, illustrate, point three, illustrate. When I wake up the next morning, when the alarm goes off, I'm shaving and showering, point one, illustrate, point two, illustrate. In the sacristy, when I get here, I'm pacing with my robe on, my mic on, I'm ready, I'm pacing, and then I close up that manuscript in the briefcase, and I go in and do it.
So you have written it at one time?
Oh, yeah.
So it has been written out.
By Friday. But you know what? I'm a long-ago generation. I still write it on legal-size notepads. I still write it by hand.
And because it is for memory, it helps your style tell it. Is that the reason?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would fault you, because I've seen you preach many times, and you don't even look down at anything.
No.
Is there any note on your pulpit at
no,
all?
None.
Have you ever been lost and wondered where you are and forgotten the third point?
Once or twice, but not in years and years. No, it doesn't happen to me. I am so focused by that time. You know, I may not could call the name of one of my grandchildren just before church because I am so focused at that point. I'm thinking of nothing else from about 5 o'clock Saturday. I mean, just trying to get it into my mind. I don't try to memorize word for word. I'm not trying to memorize word for word, but I'm thinking very clearly about the point. You know, the first point is all people sin or something. Okay, but then what is the illustration? And then the second point, illustration. And 8:30, frankly, I do the best I can, but it's also a trial run. I'm getting the timing down and everything for the 11 o'clock service that's televised, trying to get the timing down. And often I'm thinking, gee, I've got to cut 3 minutes. I've got to cut 4 minutes or something before the 11 o'clock service. And I go teach Sunday school for an hour. But still in the back of my mind, I'm working on it. And I'm getting a sip of water. And I'm thinking, I've got to cut 3 minutes. But let me tell you one other quick thing. I had a number of different preaching professors. But for me, the most helpful person I ever had in the way I write a sermon was a high school literature teacher. Her name was Miss Lila Bell Legrone, and in my senior year, she walked into our class and did sort of a to sir with love thing. She said, in this little East Texas oil town, I'm assuming every one of you is going to college. So I'm going to teach you how to write a term paper. She taught us how to start with a world of material and move to half that much material and then a fourth of that much material. Every Monday morning, I start with a lot of material. By Tuesday, I have half that material. By Wednesday, I'm down to a fourth of that material, just the best. Thursday, outline. Friday, find the best current illustrations I can find. I still do it the way Miss Lila Bell taught me. One of my sons, not knowing that story, said to me years ago when he was in college, Dad, how could you have ever chosen a job where you have to write a term paper every week and get up and give it to the class on Sunday? And I said, well, you know the right answer for that is, I don't think I chose this job.
Right. Yeah. You're reminding me of my church in Grand Forks, North Dakota, Reverend A.A. Peterson, and he was a great speaker, known for that. I'm probably about 8, 9 years old, and he steps into the pulpit, and he just confessed to the congregation that he did not have time to prepare a sermon that Sunday.
Whoa.
I've just been too busy.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, this is great. It was about 25 minutes to noon. We're going to get out of here. Don't you suppose he spoke till 10 after noon?
Well, you know, even having said all that I have about how nervous and anxious I can be, I've put in my years as a Methodist preacher some years ago. I could have retired. Gail and I have managed our money very well financially. I could have retired. I'm preaching because I love it. I believe what I do is important. I can hardly wait to get to my study on Monday morning. A lot of preachers take Monday off and they say, I'm exhausted. No, no, I can hardly wait. If I didn't do as well the day before as I thought I should have done, I can hardly wait to get started. If I thought things went pretty well, I can hardly wait to do that again. So Monday morning, I'm ready to get my books out of my shelves here and start to work on next Sunday. The Monday through Friday is hard, gut-wrenching sort of work. But Sunday morning, if it happens, it's wonderful. You know, it's absolutely wonderful.
Is it true you threw away 30 years of sermons?
I did.
Why?
Gail and I were moving from the parsonage. The parsonage was over 40 years old and had a lot of problems. It was on a very valuable piece of real estate. So we decided the church could sell it and put the money into an endowment fund and pay us a housing allowance and let us buy our own house. We'd lived in that parsonage at that point 20 years when that happened, and every night I would get home, Gail would be sorting things to go to the Salvation Army or Goodwill. She'd say, can you live without this? Can you live without this? And one night I got home, and at the dinner table she said, what are you going to do with that closet full of sermons? I've never repeated a sermon. Now, if I go out and preach somewhere else, I will, but not in my own church. Boston Avenue has not heard the same sermon twice in 31 years. I write a new sermon every week. So here I had a closet filled with manila folders of sermons. And I said, can I think about that a while? I mean, I just really hadn't thought about it. And she said, sure. So she went on into another room, and I sat down, and I thought about it, and thought about it, and thought about it. Finally, I went in and picked up box after box after box and carried them out to the curb. The next morning when I went out to get the paper, they were gone. Because this is the truth, John. There are very few Charles L. Allens who can write sermons in a way that other people will buy them. There are a few, not many of us. In the same way that most of the organists who do great work in our churches, like here at Boston Avenue, Fred Elder, 36 years, and now the Panseras have given us 11 terrific years. Those musicians play preludes and offertories and postludes and hymns, and they offer up the best they've got, and it either happens or it doesn't, and the next Sunday they play again. And that's true of preaching for most of us. You work hard on it. You give it the best you got. You entrust your best effort to God, and it either happens for those who hear it, or it doesn't happen, and it's gone. It's like stepping into a river, different river next Sunday. The water's still moving. And I felt that symbolically, that said how I really understand preaching. So over 30 years of sermons went in the Tulsa garbage the next morning. And since then, I keep 2 years at all times. In case I'm invited to speak somewhere else, I look through and I pick out four, five, or three, however many they want me to do at some place. But when it gets to be 3 years old, it goes to the trash ever since.
Have you ever delivered a sermon and you think, that just went flat, and the reaction you got to it was surprising?
Yes.
They accepted it. That was really good, Dr. Biggs.
Yes. It does happen to me. And most of the time, I think I can tell, because I am looking into people's faces, I can tell if it's working or not. It doesn't mean I can tell about every individual in my congregation, but again, I still find sympathetic faces that I'm talking to. So I can tell those people are really interested or they're not as interested, and I'm frantically trying to make it interesting. Yes, that has happened when I felt, gee, that didn't quite happen, and there'll be people who say, gee, that's the best you've done in 6 months. And that's always so frustrating because I think I'm reading them pretty well, and maybe I'm not.